This is the Pedestrian Podcast.
I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We gonna go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
The official podcast of the UK Seahawkers. Here are your hosts, Stuart Court.
Le'Veon Bell wants to be paid as an offensive weapon, when if you're the Steelers, he's come across as a bit of a weapon himself in different ways.
And Adam Nathan.
It's tricky because Hugh Jackson said nothing for me to shove him in.
We are going to follow you. You lead us, okay? Like I told you before, you lead us to darkness, we will follow you.
Go Hawks.
Well, that was something to behold, and I'm not sure enjoyment is high on the list of what our reaction is going to be to that. Welcome to another episode of the Pedestrian Podcast, still the official UK Seahawkers podcast. This week, as ever, myself, Stuart Court, is joined by Mr. Adam Nathan. How are we, sir?
I'm still a bit delirious. I only really managed to get like 4 hours sleep last night, having had like, I think, 15 minutes on the couch, and then woke up about 9:15 again this morning and couldn't really get back to sleep. And so I don't really know where I am, but I'm probably in kind of roughly the same spot as the Seahawk receivers, which is just not all there.
No, without the use of their hands. The Seahawks, after a impressive win for the most part against the Vikings on Monday Night Football, which kind of seemed to set tongues a wagging a little bit in the Seahawks land, it all came down, crashing down to earth with the 28-12 defeat last night against the LA Rams at the Coliseum in Los Angeles, Adam. And it got going slightly in the first drive, but as soon as Goff, McVay and Gurley and all the rest of them, once they started moving the ball, that was kind of the end of our enjoyment, wasn't it?
It's interesting because obviously my other sports team is Spurs, and I take great pride in the fact that after 4 to 5 minutes of any Spurs game, I can tell you what the outcome's going to be, because you can just see whether the players are there or not, because they're just such filth the majority of the time. And the Seahawks is kind of the opposite of that. Like, the number of games this year that you've gone into them in the first drive or drive and a half or two drives, you're thinking, well, we're knackered now, we've got no chance, and then they just turn it around to win. I think I said on our WhatsApp group, I was actually pretty relaxed after the first drive that, you know, they'd scored a touchdown. But, you know, we'll make our adjustments and we'll probably go on and, you know, grab the dominance of the game and win it back and get ourselves back in it. But it just never happened. It was just, they played the whole game like they have the first drive of almost every game this season. And they just never got going. And it mystifying, to be honest.
Yeah, it was all kind of strange. I mean, I think we spoke maybe towards the end of the first half talking about how, like, people were pinning a lot of blame on the play calling and the offensive stuff, but it wasn't the play. They weren't calling for drops when it's straight in their hands or tight ends inexplicably jump in the air when they could just keep running and catch the ball. It was execution was, like I said, about enjoyment. It was way down on the list of things they did well last night, wasn't it?
For sure, but I mean, I guess execution is one thing, but it kind of follows into a wider point of talent that's there. I mean, you know, there's only so much you can probably ask of players like Jacob Hollister and Malik Turner. You know, there's a reason that these guys are, you know, on the initial depth chart at the start of the season, look where they were. That there's probably a reason for that, because they have a ceiling of talent. And, you know, fair play to them. We have milked every last drop of talent out of so many of these players. And, you know, they are on two crucial conversions that we didn't get in the first half that probably were, I would say, almost game changing in the sense that, you know, the second half was much more even. You got Malik Turner dropping an easy one and Jalen Ramsey pretending he had anything to do with it. And you got Jacob Hollister dropping one that, again, you would expect he would haul it in. So it's a combination of things that, is there the talent there and the execution? But they're probably one and the same thing, really.
Yeah. Well, I think I'm not really too, I'm not too sure where.
What did you just say?
I have no idea. It was just words. The weekend is catching up brightly with me today. It is kind of the case of, this is kind of what we expected when we talked no one really knew who Malik Turner was. He was just kind of like one of those players you said was probably possibly made up. But the fact he had impact like he did in a couple, a few games, not every game, but a couple of games this year. But the, it also says a lot that he's the guy that Russell Wilson's going to on, was it fourth down? Third down?
A few times.
He went to Josh Gordon when the game was out of hand anyway, and fourth down, and it worked. So it's pointing to that and then pointing to what Malik did is kind of unfair because as you say, the threshold of the game is a lot more in our grasp with the Turner drop than it was when Josh Gordon was converting fourth and 22s or whatever it was. But yeah, it was the most un-Seahawk primetime game I think we've probably seen under Pete Carroll. I mean, they talk about every week how they prepare the same every week for each game, 1-0 every week and all that. That they cannot chalk that out this week because I think I said to you this morning, I think apart from Carson and maybe Wilson in that first half, there's not a lot to be said of what happened kind of thing. Because no one kind of showed, oh, okay, we'll be fine. Apart from Carson, no one really looked like... It'll be fine. Like he hasn't had a drop off really, but everyone else on that offensive side of the ball, particularly the five guys up front, just look completely undercooked, which is a little bit worrying when it's week 15, it's second week of December, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, like, I guess probably the game would have meant 3 or 4% more to the Rams than it did to us in terms of the season prospects, but. Yeah. The way it was played, it was like they were must win. And we were almost, you know, when you have those week 17 games where you're already, your seeding position is already set. It was just flat. You know, I don't know anywhere near enough about defensive schemes to have a clue really, you know, what to put my finger on it. But you've just never seen so many open, just swathes of space around every receiver. They weren't really playing man. It didn't really seem like they were doing anything zone. The coverage was so soft everywhere. I mean, you and I in the flesh have seen Robert Woods carve the Seahawks up on a Monday night for Buffalo. And I don't know, he just seems to have our number. He just seems to find the soft spot in every zone. And, you know, Jared Goff is not good, but if he was given enough time and enough open receivers, like wide open, that he almost couldn't not hurt us.
Yeah, it was not pretty. But look, we'll talk more about the offense a bit later. But yeah, the defense was just kind of it. We heard a week when it kind of seemed that Michael Kendricks was going to miss last night, and he did. That Cody Barton was going to step in. That was kind of the worst possible outcome of Cody Barton making his first start against an offense which McVay, although they've had a few struggles this year, usually around their issues at running back and their ongoing issue at quarterback. But I think that is kind of what the worst we could have expected for Barton. Not to play, but that's the best Rams he could have faced kind of thing, isn't it? I mean, because he looked completely lost at times last night.
Yeah, it's funny because his first play, meaningful play, he got the block on a Goff pass, which I think set up like a 3rd and 9. We were 3-0 up at the time, and then the whole thing went to hell in a handcart. Yeah, it was just a crazy swing from that position where you're on your couch thinking, all right, we've got something going here, and then just nothingness
but there's so many. I think Barton was the one, probably I may have just been keen on more, but there was so many times when people in the back seven out defense last night were kind of looking around like it with the snap imminent. I mean, the Rams were going quick to the line and getting plays off with like 15, 20 seconds sometimes still on the play clock. So they were, it was clearly like a concerted effort to keep the Seahawks defense off balance. But as a few people are pointing out on Twitter and in the local media, this is an ongoing theme when McVay comes up against Pete Carroll in this defense, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, they almost called our bluff quite well in the sense that one of the things that Goff and the offense with McVay is famed for is, you know, they get to the line of scrimmage, they look at what the defense is doing, and then McVay changes the play or calls the play. And that didn't seem to happen at all yesterday. If anything, it was the opposite, that they had the play and our defense were waiting around to kind of show them what we were doing, and then they changed the play. But they never did. They just stuck with their convictions, and they murdered us as a result.
I mean, the 95 ceiling, game ceiling drive after Goff tried his damnedest to get us back into the game. It mean there was like four plays which were exactly the same, like consecutively. Yeah. Like not even like, oh, they went different way. They did exactly the same thing for consecutive times. Yeah, that kind of, yeah, just kind of consolidate that point. But yeah, I mean, defensively, it's just a game with no standouts at all, wasn't it? I mean, Trey Flowers had a couple of nice plays. He covered the deep ball pretty nicely. Shaquille Griffin kind of looked like he had lead in his boots. I said to you that Clowney looked a bit stiff, and maybe that's kind of how the next month is going to go if he, like, when he has, he deals with his hernia. I think it's a sports hernia issue. But then outside of that, there was literally no one really standing up. I mean, Bobby Wagner led the team with 14 tackles.
I mean, you got Diggs, obviously, with the two picks.
Yeah. But I mean, but Bobby Wagner, he led the team, but it was very un-Bobby Wagner-like, because he just kind of seemed to be, as a lot of people in that back seven were, guessing and getting it wrong more often than not last night.
Yeah, I mean, when you used to watch Earl Thomas play on the best Seahawk defense, Thomas still somehow managed to look like the fastest guy flying around. And I kind of felt the same about Diggs yesterday, but everything was in much slower motion than it was with a great defense, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
Diggs was the one that looked like he had speed, but Diggs was probably going at the speed of like a Byron Maxwell in the defense's prime, and the rest were kind of staggered down from that. And I just, what, there just seemed to be no team speed anywhere on either side of the ball.
No, but yeah, it was just completely and utterly flat. And I think, like you said, we kept waiting. Sorry, they'll turn around. This is how it kind of goes. But it never even looked like. I think they could. It's that classic when a team could play all day and not score. That kind of felt like what last time. They could still be playing now, and it probably still would be a 16-point lead and everything else. They still would be relying on the boot of Jason Myers again. But it was just, yeah, it was kind of it. I mean, not to get too reactionary, because a lot of people have that covered. It is slightly concerning, though, isn't it? Because, as I say, to look like this in December, can be a wake up call, especially with who possibly there is awaiting them next week. But this, like you texted me this morning, this is not going to carry weight in week 17 and into January, is it?
No, but then I guess, you know, I've tried to be quite pragmatic about it. And so let's say you look at it on a more negative way, and you say that, you know, the team has got like a plus, or had before last night, like a plus 36-point differential with eight wins. So you're winning a lot of close games. So you're either doing that because you are just uber, uber, uber clutch and you know, and you're that brilliant at doing it and you turn everything to perfection, or you're doing it because, you know, you're digging in and you're working as hard as you can and you're maximizing the talent, and then you're winning it because you've just got a clutch quarterback who's having a great time. And as a result, that eventually is going to have to wear off, because it's just not sustainable. And, you know, so I guess the question is, do you think that, you know, last night is the result of the fact that it's just not that good a team that's been riding it and squeezing everything they've got? Or is it just one of those where they just couldn't quite hang? I mean, I kind of take the view that the thought of winning the Super Bowl was always going to be, you know, if we would have howled in August if you said that was going to be an option. And I know that, you know, things do change during the season, but to be realistic, looking at the rosters and whatever, we have a good team that are playing really, really well and working their asses off to stay competitive, which is an amazing job. And maybe it just caught up with us yesterday, and maybe hopefully it'll just be a one-off, but it wouldn't stun me if we got housed by the 49ers and then went one and done in the playoffs against Dallas. But if we did, I think that'd still be a pretty good season based on what I thought it was going to be in August.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure if I say it on here or just say it like in just general conversation, but I'm pretty certain I said I think it would be the same season as last season. I think that's what I think I said. This is going to be sneak into the playoffs and then go to Dallas and lose, which is obviously clearly what may happen. I think this team before last night was in that second tier of not the Saints, not the Niners, and not the Ravens, and it still is in that second tier of like that. They are a third to fifth seed on either side of the league, aren't they, really? Mm-hmm. And that hasn't really changed last night. I mean, you watch that game last night, the Niners-Saints game, and that's just like, like it is so often when Kyle Shanahan is calling plays and calling games. It's like a different sport to what we watch. But that different sport has kind of been on the same train tracks for a lot. But last night it was completely and utterly derailed. So I think we'll win the next two because I think Kyler Murray has completely hit a wall. I think the Arizona game is going to be more awkward, I think. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that week 17 is just not. It looms large and not. It's kind of like the Atlanta playoff game a few years ago. And who was the play caller that day as well, Adam?
I mean, it's interesting because, in a way, if you don't think you can beat the Niners on that game, like you'd almost rather have another loss. This is a very, very far-fetched thought, but the last thing you want is to get apps is to like have a bloodbath against San Francisco on a Sunday night, and then have to go to Dallas and play on the Saturday in the playoffs. You know, with half your energy taken out by an absolute like slobber knocker against the 49ers. So in a way, it's kind of going to be weird to see how the next few weeks pan themselves out before that game, because whilst you obviously would love to have the chance to, you know, get the number one seed or win the division on that game, it's going to be, you know, given the injuries we're already picking up, managing workloads into January is going to be significant.
Yeah, and you know, as you say, the cupboard is becoming increasingly bare. On the offensive side of the ball, Adam Russell Wilson, 22-36, 245, and obviously no offensive touchdown last night, and the interception at the end of the game. Chris Carson said 15 carries, 76, but the first play Rashad Penny had last night kind of it seems to, although Pete Carroll said it was a legit sprain and not the actual. I don't think he said it was a season ender, but all the messages coming from Rashad Penny and his teammates in the locker room suggest that Rashad Penny's season ended at a time when his career was just about getting going, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, again, team speed. He was one guy that just looked quicker than everyone else. But even on that run, it was exciting. And yeah. you had something there. And yeah, I don't think we are kind of the run to win, give 20 touches to your running back and you'll win kind of people. But equally, I don't think we're so on board with the analytics stuff. And, you know, having seen some people say today, of the analytics brigade that, you know, it's a shame the Seahawks lost Penny because of the human element, but ultimately is still a running back. I don't know how you can watch the last few weeks and think that player is just so dispensable that you can just toss him out with anyone else. Like, look at how Procise played in comparison, who looked like a lost child out there. To reduce Penny's influence to just another running back, I just think is ridiculous.
It's just stupid. But like, you cannot watch the next 55 minutes of that game and come away thinking that, because the team looked like they had no, like, not a plan B, because obviously they do have a plan B, because the score got away from them. They didn't want they would not have wanted Russell Wilson to throw the ball 36 times in Los Angeles, so they clearly had a plan B. But yeah, there was just no juice. There's nothing to pretty much anything that offense did last night, apart from it being close to unwatchable. CJ Process had one carry for 2 yards. I mean, like, I know the scoreboard was against us, so the running game kind of was curtailed a little bit. I mean, Carson had 15, Gurley had 23 carries, so that kind of suggests how the scoreboard was slanted, especially when you're trying to drain clock and stuff. But one carry for 2 yards, I mean, Rashad Penny had the third play of the game, fourth play of the game. It was quite clear that he was going to be a massive part of it, and they talked it up about being that 1-2 punch, and then the 1-2 punches disappeared in a flash. So now the question is how they're going to, like you said, rediscover that juice, and who's going to be the source. Because I'm surprised that they didn't even give a look. I mean, I know, like, again, the scoreboard was saying what it was saying, but Travis Homer has been raved about for about a month by Pete Carroll. Obviously, he had the big play on the punt fake last week against the Vikings, but he didn't even see the field on offense. I mean, that's the sort of thing where it was the opportunity to see something from him on doing at being a running back, which is what he was drafted as, Adam.
The only thing I could say maybe in relation to that is that maybe he's just had so few reps that they wanted to try and keep the game as close as they possibly could for as long as they could. You know, even going into the fourth quarter, it was still a game. And I guess their thinking may have been that if Homer's had no reps, you just to throw him in there, it could be dangerous, or at least ProSize vaguely knows what's going on. But yeah, it wouldn't stun me if Homer jumped this week on a week he can actually practice with the guys and get loads of reps as the guy that is the Penny replacement, because they seem to have, from a profile perspective, fairly similar styles, even though the quick outside game that Carson doesn't necessarily possess.
No. But also, Homer's been active like last month in lieu of ProSize. Before last night, it was the first time ProSize has played since week 7, I think. So, yeah, there is clearly a shifting of... maybe you're right. It was a little weird that we didn't even see him on the field for an offensive snap. Outside of that, Adam, DK Metcalf had the biggest offensive play for the Seahawks on the day with the 35-yard sideline grab, which is easily Russell Wilson's best throw. And it was what we saw in the first 6 weeks in DK Metcalf, but he continues to give some and taketh away at the same time, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's frustrating me at the moment. He's obviously got an immense amount of talent when things are going right, but this is stupid, but like some players have the credit in the bank to give away 15-yard penalties in crucial spots for unsportsmanlike conduct, and for me, DK Metcalf right now is not one of them, and that was a really frustrating thing to do. It kind of tallies up with the fumbles that we've had recently and the drops and some of the not great routes that he's been running. So, he's a rookie and he's doing a good job for a rookie. And in fairness, he probably has way too much responsibility on his shoulders given the lack of talent elsewhere. But I think he's come down to earth with a bit of a bump in the last 2-3 weeks.
Yeah, which is weird to say when he catches all 6 targets and gets 78 yards and leads the team in targets, receptions and yardage. And obviously, as I said, had the biggest play on offense as well.
I'm talking nonsense with that, in fairness, but I don't know, he's just slightly on my radar for a couple of things that frustrated me a bit.
Yeah, I think the rookie wall is a legitimate thing, like maybe what he's hit, but as weird and straight, as I said earlier, the weird and strange as ProSize Homer kind of power share was, or lack thereof, for Homer last night, it's equally the same that Josh Gordon is not getting the looks. He's been around now for 5 or 6 weeks. I mean, he's making the plays when he's asked to, like the 23-yard on fourth down, which kind of didn't mean much in the grand scheme of the game in the context of it, but he's making plays. He is possibly going to be the Travis Homer of the receiver core, because Malik Turner has made a couple of plays. Obviously, he had the big drop last night. David Moore just kind of, he's having the strangest season. Yeah, he's there. But like, they need to, like we just said, they need to find new ways of getting juice. And surely, with what Josh Gordon's got on his highlight reel, he should be given more opportunities to show his worth, shouldn't he? I mean, he's probably at the front of the queue.
He had a good catch in the first drive of the game as well, if I'm not mistaken, on the near sideline. And I thought, right, okay, this obviously going to be different and he's going to be more involved. And he was, in the sense that I think he maybe had 3 targets versus 1 or 2 from the previous games. But, I mean, Lockett is unfortunately fucked, is the only way I could put it. I mean, he just doesn't look like he can move with anything like the speed that he had. So you have to find a way to try and incorporate some of the other guys. And I think that partnered with not great offensive line play yesterday. I thought this, going back to the Philadelphia game, that Wilson was starting to look downfield and just kind of the shrug emoji of, what am I supposed to do here? And it was a bit of the same in the Minnesota game, apart from a couple of busted coverage plays, that I just wonder if there's enough there for the quarterback to play with, even in the context of him doing so many magical things. Kind of, there's only so much he can do by himself with needing other people as well, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and as I had a conversation with Alistair Corp in the week, this is, I really want us to pick a wide receiver in the first round, because it's just a ridiculous crop coming into the league next year. And like you said, the last 2 weeks has done absolutely nothing to dispel that. Obviously, we're going to get Will Disley back next year, but what is he going to look like after 2 dreadful leg injuries? It's gonna be a lot to ask him to immediately contribute like he did before he got injured this year. But the wide receiver group has to be addressed in some form or some shape or some manner over the offseason, because it's there's a reason that the amount of sacks that this O-line has given up. It's not just because they're not playing great. It's because Russell Wilson is keeping hold of the ball because, yeah, he just doesn't trust his players. I mean, the two drops last night kind of proved it. I mean, they weren't even deep balls. It was just kind of in the middle of the field kind of thing. But the trust is waning, I think, from Russell Wilson to some of his receivers. Everything just seemed to come home to roost last night in the worst possible way, didn't it?
Yeah. Obviously our mates at Analytics have got their, you know, blanket statement that, you know, sacks are a QB stat. But there's only so much you can possibly ask of a quarterback when he's got those five offensive linemen getting mauled by people like Aaron Donald and nothing in front of him to throw it to. You know, he probably took a couple of sacks that he could have done a bit more with, and maybe he is seeing ghosts a little bit. But, I mean, come on, the guys can only do so much by himself.
Yeah, I mean, there's one sack if they give up and one sack Brown give up. But, like, they can't maintain a block for any longer than they could, because no one knows. And the current clientele of referees in this league, it's going to be a hold on both of them. I mean, if Eddie did well, and then he kind of like, yeah, he did let him crawl under him pretty much, but he was still back there for 5-6 seconds, and Russell Wilson's just not, he still has the ball. So at a certain point, there is a certain, I mean, I think, don't they have the most sacks in under 2.5 seconds in the league or something?
Yeah.
Which is an O-line thing, but a couple of those five last night are not completely on a dishevelled O-line, which it did look.
Oh no, I agree with you on that. But it's just not that all of them are kind of his fault either. It's a mixed bag.
Anything to point to praise last night, Adam?
No, but I have one more thing to say about that. I'm not praising anything today. But I was thinking that there were a couple of times where we're in kind of like 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8, obvious passing downs. And one thing that frustrated me a lot last night is that there didn't appear to be any plan in order to, especially when you're in 4-down territory, to like, okay, how do we get 4 yards here? We don't need to get the first down, just pick up 4. I mean, I always hark back to the Aaron to Richard Rodgers plays where before the ball was even snapped, it seemed the ball was out of Aaron Rodgers' hands and into the tight ends and for a pickup of 3 or 4, just like flopping over a line. And we didn't seem to do any of that yesterday, and that did frustrate me slightly. Against the Steelers, obviously, they were praised for how quickly they turned to like a quick passing game, but didn't seem to be any of that yesterday, which I thought was a bit of a shame.
Yeah, everything come home to is they kind of just, no one on that sideline or on that field had they didn't have any control of really what was going on. They just never kind of got going at any aspect of it. Yeah, it's just everything you can point to saying, yeah, that was kind of, they were unprepared or undercooked or they were off balance or whatever. Every aspect of that game last night. I think the only positive last night, Adam, was that the game lasted 3 hours and 1 minute.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't last the full 3 hours and 1 minute, I don't think. I think I fell asleep with about 3 minutes to go on the couch. But yeah, I mean, thank God it didn't finish at 5:30, because that would have been awful.
That's the Seahawks now are in the fifth seed spot, but still control their own path to one, the NFC West, and secondly, a longer shot at the number one seed, given who the Saints have to play, but a wild card weekend off, which, if these injuries continue to amount, Adam, could be somewhat of a blessing having that second week off, couldn't it? That's all they really have to look towards now, really, isn't it?
Yeah, that's very true. If they can find a way to get that bye week, it would be of immeasurable importance. And also, I think 17 of the last 20 teams in the Super Bowl have had that bye.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not just about getting to the dance. It does matter to get, get that bye if you can. But let's see. It's going to be tricky either way. And I think ultimately that the Niners are probably just a better team than us. And there's no shame in saying that.
No.
But, you know, you'd be hard-pressed to say that, you could see a way that which we'd finish above them at the moment.
But yeah, after all that, the Seahawks go back on the road and head down to the Queen City, North Carolina, Charlotte, to face Kyle Allen, Christian McCaffrey, and the Carolina Panthers. We will, hopefully, we'll be back later in the week with that podcast. If you want to get involved and send your questions in, you can on all the usual means and methods on Twitter, @SeahawksUK. on Facebook, UK Seattle Seahawks fans, all the Pedestrian Podcast Facebook page as well. Until later in the week, we're just going to go away for a couple of days and lick our wounds and kind of try to figure out what on earth happened last night. But this has been the Pedestrian Podcast.
Go Hawks, if you'd like.